Hey from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
Hello, Darren Patterson.
Hello, hello, sir. We're like halfway through the summer. Or it feels like it just started.
Summer always flies by.
Right?
Yeah, it's like my favorite season, but it's always way too short. Winter drags. Summer is just...
like, yes.
You know, the beginning of the summer, when it's like, you know, May, the show winds up, and we're like planning out our summer, and we're like, oh, we got all these, we got like 10 weeks. And then just, before you know it, it's like, oh, no, it's nearly August.
Oh, back to school season. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, kids are school shopping already. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that either one of us has kids, but.
Yeah. I mean, we see them like in the store.
We
like,
see them. We do not acknowledge them.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're not following them or nothing. Like, we just happen to see them, and we're like, oh, children, and we walk in the other direction.
Yeah, because we don't consider them people.
No, God, no.
Yeah.
I mean, they're almost people. They're going to be there. But
they're almost people. Give them another 20 years, they'll get there.
Yeah, it's like you don't consider a puppy a full-sized dog. You know?
Exactly.
Like
that is a perfect metaphor.
Thank you. You get it.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like that. Mm-hmm. These kids are puppies. They're not full dogs. They ain't no dogs. That's a good way to say it, right?
Right, right.
Kingpin.
Basically, anyone under the age of 25, I consider a fetus.
Yes, exactly. You're a small, small child. Your brain isn't fully developed, and you have you have no real thoughts of your own until you hit the golden age of 25.
Right. Unless you're a listener to this podcast.
Yes.
In which case you have... refined taste beyond your years.
Yes, exactly. Yes. If you are a fan of this podcast and if you are a little on the younger side, then we applaud you. Yeah. And please don't forget to rate and review and subscribe and pass the word on to your friends.
Yeah, show some kindness to your elders.
Exactly. Exactly. My knees are going, so like I'm going to need some elder care not too far in the future.
So exactly. Exactly. So contribute to the Patreon.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I can get some a nice nurse assistant to take care of me in my old age, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all we want. That's all we really want.
That's all I ever asked for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Kingpin. Speaking of old, how is this movie 30 years old? This movie came out in 1996, I did the math. 30 years ago. 30 freaking years ago.
I crunched the numbers. And we didn't even mean to do this. We just kind of picked, the movie we're doing is Kingpin. We just picked it out at random. And it's coming up on a 30 years because this movie came out July 26th, 1996. It's going to be 30 in a week.
I'm upset. I'm upset. Actually, by the time you listen to this episode, because we are recording this like a week ahead of time, I think. Yeah, so you should be listening to this on or about the 30th anniversary of this movie, which boggles my mind. This is wild. This is crazy pants. What are we even doing here?
I don't know. What is
it's time, a movie from the 90s. It should be 20 years old on the outside.
That's what I keep telling people, and they keep saying, sir, do you need help? Why are you screaming at us in this Dairy Queen?
This is a Wendy's. Yeah.
This is a Wendy's. This is just someone I can call elder care. It's like, no, they haven't donated to my Patreon yet, so I don't have my nurse.
That's right. It's all cyclical. So, this was like the second movie for the Farrelly brothers.
After they had their first big hit with Dumb and Dumber, which was a big old blockbuster hit, this movie came out, and then... I think this movie, from what I've seen, it did okay, but not great. It had a budget of 25 mil, grossed about 32 mil. So it made its money back, but it definitely wasn't the hit that Dumb and Dumber were. But the movie they made after this, There's Something About Mary. So
apparently this movie did underperform, because the first thing on IMDb trivia about it, it says... Peter Farrelly called the film's box office failure the biggest disappointment of the Farrelly brothers' career, attributing the failure to its release during the 1996 Olympics. Farrelly said it was a crushing blow to their ego. However, he said that 6 to 8 months later, when the film was released on home video, it became a big hit. So,
Yeah, because I mean, I was in college when this came out. I remember doing, I don't think it was a failure the way Peter remembers it, but I remember not doing great, but it did all right.
Yeah.
But it is one of those movies where, like, now it kind of has a bit of a cult following. And, you know, when people still look at Ernie McCracken lovingly and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And, so this is directed by the Farrelly Brothers, written by Barry Finero and Mort Nathan, a writing team that worked on The Golden Girls. And Barry went to write on, he wrote Men in Black 2 and I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. Okay. And yeah, and of course, Mort went to write and direct the classic cinematic masterpiece that is Boat Trip with Cuba Gooding Jr. and Horatio Sands.
Which I have never seen Boat Trip in full, but
we could do it for the podcast. But
we could do it. It has Horatio Sands. It is, yeah.
Somebody's gonna have to donate to our Patreon for us to watch it because I've never seen it, but I have a feeling it's gonna be like
I'm
horrible.
Not clamoring to see Boat Trip. I know. Yeah, I know Roger Moore is in it.
Okay.
I know there's a lot of attractive actresses playing like the Swedish Bikini Team or something like that. Because remember when the Swedish Bikini Team was a thing because they were in some commercial or another.
Yeah, and like they were probably like a Bud commercial or something.
Yeah, something then, like that.
Yeah, and they were everywhere because you know, guys love the ladies. Go yo yoing, awuga.
But this, I think this might actually be my favorite of the Farrelly Brothers movies. I think I do like this better than There's Something About Mary.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, interesting.
This movie made me laugh a lot back in the day, so it was interesting to revisit it.
Okay, and so would you say it still holds up?
I enjoyed revisiting it. I've seen it a number of times before, so it doesn't really have any surprises to me anymore.
Okay.
So, yeah, but I wasn't like, oh, this is horrible. How did I ever like this?
Okay.
But, you know, it doesn't have the shock of the new anymore. You know?
Yeah, I know. Like some of those jokes that are in this movie, which we'll talk about, like it really kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah,
some of these jokes were like,
I'm surprised the Farrelly Brothers didn't write this. I was very surprised when I saw that on this rewatch. I was like, oh wow, I thought they wrote most of their stuff.
But I was, yeah, that makes sense.
Not so much.
I mean, maybe that's why it didn't do super great because, you know, they need to pen it and direct it for it to be to sort of have their flair, their flavor to it. Interesting. Shall we get into this this cinematic masterpiece?
No.
But I have all these notes.
I know. I just wanted to throw you a curveball. I was just no, let's not talk about the movie.
Okay. Oh, wait. Actually, before we talk about the movie.
Oh, yeah. We do have some breaking SNL news. It came out this week, Chloe Fineman leaving Saturday Night Live after 7 seasons.
So. Yeah. I'm not surprised that she's, leaving. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that it came out this summer, though, because this is usually like a fall thing.
Yeah, we don't usually get this news in July. I guess that really emphasizes that it was her choice, so...
Yeah. It seems like she wasn't let go. Let me see if I can pull it up. She made it official on Instagram, like as most people do these days. They make they take.
Well, Chloe Fineman in particular seems to be a big Instagram user.
Very
active on that site.
Yeah, but it seems like whenever somebody wants to make like a big proclamation, they take to the gram, like their big hear ye moment. They go on the IG. So So Chloe posted up. Not too long ago, or about 4 days ago from as of this recording, saying, after 7 wonderful seasons at SNL, I have decided it's time for my next chapter. It's cliche to say this, but working at SNL has been the greatest privilege of my life. I still can't really believe I got to be a part of it. I fell in love with the place the second I walked through the door. Lauren, if you're reading this on your burner account, I want you to know that I am forever in your debt. Every day I was lucky enough to be surrounded by the best people in the business, and I was constantly amazed watching them work. Sewing a JoJo Siwa costume in 10 hours, writing a cold open at 2 p.m. on a Saturday, finishing the VFX of a video minutes before dress, parentheses. I don't know if finishing VFX is the right technical term, but you get the idea. I'm definitely not the first to make this observation, but it really is a funny looking, it really is funny looking back at it all now, because at the show, you get so invested in everything you work on. You sob uncontrollably when your sketch isn't picked. You storm into a producer's office telling them that they've just made the biggest mistake of their lives. You call everyone you know to complain. And then you look back a few years later, and it was a sketch called Lipstick for Thick Dogs. Mm-hmm. But that's just the show. You respect it so much that you give it absolutely everything you have, even when it's incredibly stupid. So you're ecstatic when it works out, and the most devastated you've ever been when it doesn't. And in the end, it doesn't matter all that much, but it did at the moment. It's really hard to leave SNL, but it does feel like the right time. I'm going to miss it a lot. But the people who work there are my family, and that place is my home. And I know I'll never be too far away. And I swear to God, one day, sometime in the future, they will make lipsticks for thick dogs.
Okay.
And that's it. Yes. And that's all she wrote.
Well, I mean, you know, my basic feelings is I think she picked a good time to leave. I think like six or seven seasons is just about perfect for an SNL cast member. You know, it's a long enough time for us to enjoy them and get used to them and appreciate them, but not so long that we get sick of them. So
I agree. I think
that's about perfect.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think she was a solid performer, solid, mm-hmm. Supporting performer. I do feel like we kind of saw everything she could do, and she kind of took it as far as she could.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised in that, like, when she first started, I thought for sure she was going to be, like, the next breakout star.
Yeah.
And not to take anything away from her, I think she was great. But she didn't become, like, a breakout star on the level of, like, a Kristen Wiig or a Kate McKinnon or a Cecily Strong. And she was more of, like, a utility player. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
And she's the type of cast member I like to see because, like, great in impressions, brilliant impressionist, and very versatile. So, you know, she fit in pretty much anywhere the show put her. So, yeah, I always enjoyed her.
Yeah. I always thought she was okay. I know for some reason she gets a lot of online hate from weirdos or whatever, but which I never really truly understood. But, you know, I thought she was a good performer. Like, I agree with you. Like, when she first came on, it seemed like, oh, she's going to be the next breakout star. And that never quite happened, even though she got a number of chances to sort of headline sketches and be the focus. And they were always okay, but they never quite took, never quite caught fire like some other performers did. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think she was a good performer. We kind of saw everything she could do. We enjoyed her in the movie Summer of 69, which we've talked about on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And hope she does well and goes on to bigger and better things. I think she already booked a role on a new Netflix series, like a dramatic Netflix series.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah.
Just a day or two ago. So I'm sure she's not going to be hurting for work. She was in, what was that? What was that Coppola film that she was in?
A
year or two back.
Oh, the weird one. The one that was had Aubrey Plaza in it.
Yeah.
Acropolis or had like Adam Driver. I know what you're talking about, but I'll look it up.
The weird one. Yeah.
The weird one that where everybody, even Coppola fans were like, this is kind of weird, man.
Yeah.
Even they were like, I don't know if I can go with you here, brother. This is odd. But yeah, she's done that. She's been in a bunch of movies. She's going to be in that new Jake Johnson Apple series, The Dink. I think she's in a movie that's out right now that I can't remember right now. But yeah, she's still in stuff. She's, you know, she should be out here working. But I mean, now that she's gone, SNL is down to 4 female cast members. So they gotta hire some ladies.
Let's see. We got who do we have? We have Sarah Sherman,
who is now like the senior female cast member. Oh,
that's
member.
Weird to think. It's
true.
That's bizarre. We got Jane Wickline.
Yeah.
For now. who else?
Got Padilla. Big Bad Padilla. Padilla.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, Ashley Padilla is going to be there for several more years to come, I would say. Yeah.
And then you got Veronica Slowikoska.
Wow, and that's really it. Wow.
That's it.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. It is. Like, they're going to have to make some hires.
We're going to have to get some women in there. Yep.
Get some dames in here. Step. Yep. That's my Lauren impression.
Yep. We need some double X chromosomes.
Yeah. Oh, we need some broads in here.
Yeah.
Marone. I'm Lauren Michaels over here.
Flawless Lauren Michaels impression.
Right? Thank you. Yeah. All right. So, and also Chloe Fineman. She was in the movie you're thinking about, Megalopolis.
Megalopolis. That's the movie I was thinking of.
And she was also
the weird one.
The weird. She was also in that movie Babylon, the one that was directed by Damien Chazelle.
Oh, she was in that. I've been meaning to watch Babylon. That was it took place in like the 20s and like the silent movie era, right?
Yeah, like Margot Robbie's in it and Brad Pitt. It's a movie like it kind of bombed, but people it has a lot of defenders. People say it is actually good.
It's been on my watch list for a while. Still haven't checked it out.
So. I mean, she was in the last Freakier Friday movie with Vanessa Bayer.
Okay.
Did voiceover in Despicable Me 4. You know, she's out here. She's working.
She's out there in these streets.
She's working. She's doing the thing.
Okay. All right. Well, she's not hurting.
Yeah. She ain't hurting. She's working. So
fare thee well, Chloe Fineman. We shall miss you.
Yes. Fare thee well, Fineman. We salute you. Here at the SNL Nerds. All right. So Kingpin.
Kingpin.
Let's get into it.
1996.
Ocelot, Iowa.
Ocelot, Iowa, 1969.
Yes.
Got a young man by the name of Roy Munson. He likes bowling.
Ever since he was a little boy, his daddy at the gas station would be like, "Hey, come on there, little Roy, let's play some ball." And the father set up a little like bowling alley for the boy to bowl. And it's like, "Boy, you're gonna be something. You're gonna be a star. You got a gift there, boy. You know what I'm saying right now? You're gonna take it to the top, brother boy."
It's like the natural up in here. Yeah,
that's right. And then we hop 10 years into the future, and this little boy turns out to be Woody Harrelson in like his long kind of 70s wig, and he's bowling in the state amateur championship, and he's the man. Like, he struts in, all the men want to be him, all the women want him, and some of the men probably want him too. And you know, he eats somebody's slice of pizza, and the guy's like, "Wow, Roy Munson ate my pizza, rad." And that's how they talk to the 70s.
Yeah, and then he's like bowling strikes, and then like disco dancing.
Life is good.
It's pretty damn good to be Roy Munson in 1979.
Yeah, and his dad is like super proud of him. Says he's going to be the DiMaggio of bowling, and his dad even gives him a pocket watch because this is when Roy is going to make his bones in the bowling world.
And he's going to go on a professional bowling tour.
So. Well, one of his first big matches, he goes against Ernie McCracken, played by the legendary Mr. Bill Murray.
I've heard of him. Yes.
And, I mean, Bill Murray in this role, he really, he's like slimier than I've ever. This is like the slimiest role he's ever been.
I think this is like one of the great Bill Murray performances. I think if I was making a list of like maybe top 5 Bill Murray performances, I think Ernie McCracken in Kingpin would be up there.
I would agree, because if he's not in the movie a lot,
No, really. No, he disappears for the whole middle stretch of the movie, and I miss him. I'm like, where's Bill Murray?
Yeah, like he's not, like in the beginning of the movie, he's in it. Like the whole chunk of the middle, he's not. Yeah. And then he appears.
And then curveball in it again. Yeah.
Yeah.
At the so end, like but- in a movie, out of the movie, then in the movie. I mean, who does that?
Crazy. But he's still like super memorable. Like you're still like, oh yeah, Ernie McCracken. I remember him. Yeah. I mean, and he was so good. I mean, according to, I believe what the Farrelly brothers says, like he kind of, he pretty much ad-libbed most, if not all of his lines.
Yeah. Yeah. He would just like glance at the script, kind of get the gist of the scene. And then he'd be like, okay, yeah, I know what I'm doing. And then he'd go in and just do whatever the F he wanted because he's Bill fucking Murray.
Yeah. I mean, according to the Farrelly brothers on the DVD commentary, they said they're glad that he did that because it was funnier. He made it so much more better than it was. But yeah, so 1979, Roy's going against Ernie at the Order Eaters Invitational.
Yep.
And sure enough, he wins. Ernie is fuming mad, storms out, and he gets a big old check. You know, he's making his way. Cut to, Roy has some car trouble because turned out somebody put sugar in his gas tank, which was something that could really mess up your car back in the day.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like $2,000 worth of damage. And, yeah, then he runs into Ernie McCracken again.
Oh.
By the way, Bill Murray has a wonderful, like, 70s fro in these flashback scenes. Very, very funny.
It's very nice. so then, Roy and Ernie have lunch, and then, you know, I think you get to see how kind of how jerky and smarmy Ernie is. At one point, he tells a waitress, hey, would you mind washing off that perfume before you come back to our table, please?
Yeah. Like, and I love it when he just like leans back in his chair. He starts hitting on the women at the table behind him. And he just goes, hey. And one woman says, hey, back to him. And he just goes, not you. And then the woman next to her just is like, hey. And I read that, like, that was, of course, a Bill Murray improv. But he felt so bad about it after the take. He like apologized to the women playing those parts.
I'm so sorry. I had to go for the joke. You get it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of adorable.
It is.
Like as soon as they called cut, he went and apologized.
Yeah. No, he plays a really good jerk, like slimy. He's almost on like a Chevy Chase level of jerk in this movie.
I feel like, you know, Bill Murray can turn it on and off more than Chevy Chase can. Chevy Chase, his jerk dial just got stuck to 11.
His jerk dial is broken.
Yeah, you know, Bill Murray can scale it down to like a 6.
Yes, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah.
So we see Ernie talk to Roy about, like, yeah, sorry, you know, about your car. But, like, you know, you need to sort of have, like, a side hustle. You need to make some money on the side, like all the other bowlers do. And he's like, do you want to do that? You want to make some money on the side? So then he takes Roy to the, like, real secret, kind of sketchy bowling alley.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Roy has reservations about it, but he still goes and does it. And then they pull the scam on the locals there, where they pretend to be a dictionary salesman.
Yeah.
And hustle.
You're on a gravy train with biscuit wheels. I love that line.
You're on the gravy biscuit wheels. So then they pretend not to know much about bowling so they can hustle, you know, rubes out of their hard-earned money.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
and one of the guys they're up against is like a guy in a clerical collar. And he's like, oh, yeah, well, bowling, gambling, that's like my one vice. And then a waitress brings over like a beer. And he's like, oh, thanks, sugar. And he like, I think he smacks her on the ass. And he's like, oh, well, you know, two vices. And they're like, oh, well, still, that's not bad.
Yeah, forgive me, father. Then they play double or nothing. They bet and then they end up, you know, there's like a 7-10 split, which Roy makes. And of course, they end up, you know, hustling these guys for all their money, and they get into the car. Roy feels weird about it, and he's like, hey, you sure this is legal? And Ernie's like, I don't know, but it's fun though, isn't it?
Yeah. And then, like, a crowd of irate people that they just hustled come out to them, and We're always like, oh, well, you know, there comes a time when you have to go out and face the music. And Roy gets out of the car, and then Ernie immediately goes, and that time is you. This is your time. And he takes off in the car and leaves Roy to face the music alone.
Yeah. Also, Roy sees there's a bag of sugar in the back of Ernie's car. And he's like, hey, what's that sugar there for? It's like, oh, you know, it's for the coffee.
Yeah, it's for my coffee with my breakfast. I get the feeling that this Ernie McCracken guy is not a good guy.
Yeah, I don't think he's on the level.
No. So the folks are very upset with Roy. They drag him back into the bowling alley, and they put his hand in the ball changer, and it, like, mangles his hand.
Yeah, and like, I remember the first time I watched this part, I thought it's kind of, like, horrific, this scene, because it's not...
It is, yeah.
It's, like, not played for laughs at all. It's not funny. It's literally... Roy, you know, begging and screaming, you know, for his life as he gets his hand put into a ball return and just straight up de-handed? Or was he unhanded?
Yeah, I mean, they don't, it doesn't get gory or anything. You don't see anything. There isn't even, like, a sound effect.
Right. There's no blood or nothing, but.
No, it's all just through implication, but.
Yeah, but I mean, that might even be worse because, like, it's kind of left up to your imagination and your imagination. Mm-hmm. Is worse than anything that they could put on screen, actually.
Yeah, particularly yours. I mean,
yes.
You have a sick, sick imagination.
Oh, you see my set.
The things I hear when we are off mic, people.
Oh, my God.
You don't know. You don't know.
The horror.
So his hand is damaged. His right hand is damaged. His bowling career is obviously over. We then pick up in Scranton, Pennsylvania, 17 years later, and Roy has no hand. He has a hook for a hand, and we got him answering the alarm clock, and he, like, goes to turn it off, and he just impales the alarm clock with his hook.
Yeah, and a lot of hook jokes.
We get a solid 5 minutes of just all the hardships that his hook is still causing him after 17 years. He, like, accidentally takes off the rearview mirror of his car. He rips his jacket as he's trying to put it on.
Yeah, he had this really bad comb over.
Yeah.
He's not...
The comb overs in this movie. Oh, my God. Oof. The comb overs deserve their own spot in the closing credits of this movie.
Yeah, like, I mean, we'll get there, but, like, you think Roy's comb over is bad. Just... Wait till you see Ernie's.
The air department, they 100% earned their paychecks.
They did. In this movie. They were cooking with this one, boy.
Yeah. It was like, shh, let them cook.
But yeah, so his life has kind of gone to shit. He's always drunk, and he's like 2 months behind on rent. He's living in a crappy apartment. It ain't good. It ain't good.
No. He's still trying to keep his hand in the bowling game, though. He's going to bowling alleys, and he's trying to sell them supplies. And the owner of the bowling alley is like, look, I don't need any of this stuff. I don't know what to tell you. But Roy sees a fellow who is bowling in the alley. And it's this young man named Ishmael, played by Randy Quaid, former SNL cast member Randy Quaid.
Yeah. And he's like, he's doing really well. I think Roy doesn't see him at first, but he hears him knocking down some pins. And just based on what he hears, he could tell how good he is it sounds like you know, if you do this stance, you wouldn't leave as many buckets.
If you move a couple boards over to the left, you'll fix this error in your game.
Right. Exactly. So... So then he does, and he strikes up a conversation, and he introduces himself, and he finds that his average is like around 265, 270. And so Roy sees promise. He's like, oh, this guy might be able to go somewhere. So he ends up following him, offers to be his bowling manager / coach. Ishmael's not interested. And basically he finds out that the guy, like you said, he's Amish. He lives out in the Amish country. But he doesn't want anything to do with them.
Nope. No, he's Amish, so he's trying to keep this bowling thing on the down low because it's kind of against his beliefs.
Yeah, the thou shalt not bowl.
Thou shalt not bowl. That's the 11th commandment. It's one of those secret commandments that Mel Brooks dropped.
Yeah,
in History of the World Part One.
Oi.
Roy goes back home to his apartment and he sees a guy robbing his landlady. And he comes up and he like splashes coffee in the guy's face, runs him off. And landlady's like, "Oh, Roy, you saved my life. You saved me. You know, you don't worry about that rent. You're good. You know, we're all good." And then when Roy goes into his apartment, we see that it was all a setup and the mugger was actually in league with Roy.
Right. Actually, we see that the mugger is a young Willie Garson, who's like, for those that know Sex and the City, he played Stanford, who was like a recurring character. And unfortunately, he passed away, I believe, a few years ago.
Oh, spoilers.
I'm sorry.
Oh, wait. Was this on the show or in real life?
No, in real life. Willie Garson, he passed away from
Oh, well, crap. Well, now I feel bad.
I'm sorry.
I thought you were doing spoilers for Sex and the City.
No, I mean, I think
you're saying he was killed off on Sex and the City.
No, I mean, I think his character passed away on the show because the actual man passed away, IRL, as the kids say.
Wow, way to bring the room down,
Dan. Sorry. Jeez.
He's pointing out that this guy from this movie from 30 years ago is dead now. What
sorry,
the hell, man?
I know, I'm a real jerk, but Jersey's own Willie Garson, R.I.P.
R.I.P. So, and then as Roy's paying the guy off, and the guy's like asking for extra because he's like, "I didn't expect you to throw coffee in my face.
I got burns, man."
Yeah, and then just then the landlady walks in and she's like, "Hey, Roy, I know you like drinking." So she has like a bottle of booze. That's like her peace offering.
I know you like your alcohol, so.
Right.
So she recognizes that, the guy who mugged me knows Roy. This whole thing was a setup. Oh, you piece of shit.
And Roy, throws another cup of coffee in the guy's face.
Yeah, and then the guy, and the guy, jumps out the window.
Yeah. But landlady is not being fooled a second time. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Yeah, so she threatens to call the cops. Roy says, "Hey, let's not do that. Whoa, there has to be some way I can make this up to you."
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, "Well, there's one way."
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, yeah, he sleeps with his landlady. And then we cut to, post-coital, and Roy is immediately going over to his toilet and throwing up.
Yeah, you see it, too. You see, barf coming out of his mouth. See,
yeah, you do.
I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, this movie goes there.
This movie really, I forgot how, wild this movie gets in some places. I mean,
the Farrelly brothers, they are pretty fearless in that regard. They like the outrageous humor. They like some of the gross out humor. There's some of that in here. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Hmm.
So Roy is at his lowest point right now. And then that's when he sees this magazine article, this bowling magazine article about there being a tournament in Reno where the grand prize is $1 million. So he drives back to the Amish country and tries to get that kid he saw, Ishmael, to go with him, and he could be his coach and just to win that mill because he needs that money. So I do like how he goes to Amish country dressed as an Amish person.
Yeah, and puts on the false Abe Lincoln style beard and
and then he talks like a leprechaun.
He's putting on an Irish accent for some
top of the morning and
brother Bunsen.
Top of the morning and tell ya, sister.
And he's just trying to butter them up in hopes of getting Ishmael to come with him to raise money for this bowling tournament in Reno.
Right. He poses as a brother Hezekiah from Ohio. But of course, Ishmael knows who he is right away. He says that you got to be quiet about this. My family doesn't know I bowl. And Roy tells him about the tournament, but Ishmael's still not interested. So Roy just sticks around the the farm to help with chores and also right. try to convince Ishmael to do this tournament.
He tries milking a cow.
Yeah, that scene, wow.
Yeah. He comes out, he's like, hey, I milked a cow, it took me a while to get going. And we see he's got like this huge milk mustache and he's got like a bucket of milk. And then the dad says, we don't have a cow, we have a bull. So
that was because I was like, wait, did you use, so you used your mouth? But yeah. Why did you do that?
I had to get it going.
That's the only way.
That's prime that pump, man.
Use your hands, you maniac. What are you doing? Slopping down a cow like that. Oy.
I mean, worked, didn't it?
Yeah, I guess. Holy Toledo.
Yeah, and yeah, so like after that, Roy's like, yeah, I'm going to go brush my teeth. I'm going to get some mouthwash.
Yeah. Get this bull juice out of my mouth.
Yeah, and you know, we see he doesn't really fit in with the Amish community. There's like a barn raising, and he immediately abandons the barn raising when they ring the dinner bell. And yeah. So the barn collapses.
But yeah, but no one got hurt. It's fine.
No one got hurt. It's fine. You know, it's all good. Yeah. It's all good. But yeah, they're not taken kindly to Brother Munson.
Yeah, they think they don't really understand his ways. Then we get to the scene where Roy tries to talk to Ishmael in the barn about like really going on this adventure with him. But he still says no, and then we see that Ishmael is tending to their horse Buttercup, who's like the biggest, strongest horse they have. Then Ishmael's dad comes in saying, "Hey, son, I need to talk to you for a minute. Hey, Hezekiah or Ezekiel?
One of those.
Hezekiah. Yeah, it is a Hezekiah. I'm right. He says like Ish's dad basically asked Roy to dehoof the horse, take his horseshoes off.
Yeah.
And so while that's happening, you can hear like a big calamity happening in the barn while Ish's dad tells Ish that, yeah, like we're the land, we're actually in trouble because the bank is going to threaten to foreclose on our land and we need like $500,000. And, and it looks like it's about to rain. So it's like, oh, there's a storm coming. It sounds like the angels are bowling. And that's when Ish takes that as a sign from God that he needs to go on this expedition with Roy.
Yeah, yeah. So, Ishmael decides he is going to go with Roy. After all, Roy has another comedic mishap where he's, instead of removing the horseshoes, he removed the entire hooves from the horse.
Yeah, wow. Again, they don't show it, but like you hear like a whole calamity, you hear a saw going off back and forth, and yeah, it seems like he mutilated that horse and took off and sawed off its hooves.
Yep.
Like, I was like, mother of God.
So anyway, they're gonna go off, they're gonna go to this open bowling tournament in Reno, and as they hit their first bowling alley to start their trip, Roy learns that Ishmael bowls 15 frames instead of 10 because, as he says, like the Amish, they work a 12-hour day. They work like the regular 8-hour day that most people do and then half again. So he has always bowled 15 frames instead of 10. So his real bowling average is not like 270. It's actually like 170.
Duh.
He's like, how can I do this when it's when it's just 10 frames instead of 15. We do everything half again as hard as you do. So,
son of a bitch.
Yeah.
So when Roy sees this, he's like, all right, well, maybe I can't make you a winner. Maybe we should just go home. Like, he's already ready to quit this whole excursion.
Yeah.
But like, Ish really wants to go to Reno, you know, because he can't go back home a loser. He doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want to Munson it up. Yeah. He'll come back all Munsoned, and then Roy's like, wait, are people using my last name as, like, a way of saying, like, when you failed or something?
Yeah, yeah, he learns that his last name has become a slang for failure. It's like, yeah, it's when you've screwed up beyond all recognition, and You just like, humiliate yourself and everyone who's ever known you. And yeah.
It's like, oh no. So, like, I mean, at this point, Roy kind of realizes he really has nowhere else to go. He can't really go back home. Yeah. So he's like, all right.
He has a flashback to his landlady going,
That's something that's in the mirror. Yeah, that's something that happens throughout the thing where, like, he sees the landlady doing the little the cunnilingus motion in his mind.
The universal sign of cunnilingus, where you put a little V in front of your mouth and you do some tongue action there.
Yeah, you know what's up. You know what's up, listeners. You guys are hip.
Yeah.
Hip crowd. So they figure, all right, we got nowhere else to go, so let's try to do this. We'll go to Reno. So they see some training montages. We see them on the road. We see Ishmael kind of learning how the world works outside of the Amish country. You know, you see him taking a dump in a urinal, which was I remember seeing that in the trailer and be like, wow, that is these Farrelly brothers, man.
Yep. That's something else.
That is some kind of something.
Yeah. And they go into a bowling alley. They try to pull the dictionary salesman scam because it went so well for Roy last time.
Yeah, I'm surprised he did this because, like, after what happened to him, you think he'd like want to stay away from that scam? Like, he'd be traumatized by that scam, but I guess not.
Yeah, well, I mean, this time he's not the bowler, so maybe he figures it'll work out better for him.
I see. Okay. Fair enough. You know what? That's right.
But the guy at the bar, the bowling alley, he's like, yeah, I forget. How does this scam go again? He's like onto them right from the word go.
Damn.
So he's like, hey, guys, look, if you're looking for a money game, go to this address and they'll set you up.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to this mansion and it's like $1,000 a game. And there's this kind of scuzzy guy named Stan.
Yeah, he looks like the lead singer of Bush in the 90s. But it's not. I looked it up. It's like, oh, that's not Gavin Rossdale. But his hair and his look looks a lot like Gavin Rossdale.
He seemed to have like a little eyeliner underneath his eyes.
Ooh.
I noticed.
Oh, yeah. He's fancy.
He's a fancy lad.
So, so we see not Gavin Rossdale and his lovely lady companion, Claudia, played by Vanessa Angel.
Vanessa Angel, who is probably best known for being on the Weird Science TV series.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And she also actually popped up in a movie that we've previously covered on the SNL Nerds podcast, Spies Like Us.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Do you remember when we did Spies Like Us and I played that sound clip from Siskel and Ebert of Roger Ebert, like, perving out on one of the Russian ladies in the movie? That was Vanessa Angel.
Oh, Roger.
Who just, like, you know, pops up in her underwear towards the end of the movie. Doesn't have too much to do in the movie, but just pops up and looks nice in her underwear and made quite an impression on Mr. Roger Ebert.
Roger Ebert went on, like, a 20-minute rant or soliloquy about it.
Yeah.
And then the curvature. It's like, Roger, easy, fella.
Yeah. Well, you know, the man did co-write a, what was the name of that that fellow?
Oh, Roger Corman?
No, not Roger Corman.
The Beyond the Valley of the Dolls movie?
Yeah, the Beyond the Valley of the Dolls guy. He made all the movies with the voluptuous women.
Oh, shit. I know what you're talking about. I feel like
Can't remember his name. His name went right out of my head.
Okay.
Let me look him up because that's going to drive me nuts.
Okay. Hold, please, listeners. It'll be worth it. Trust me.
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da-da.
I can picture him. Russ Meyer. That's
Russ
the guy.
Meyer.
Russ Meyer. He loved him some
jiggly bits.
Yeah. Holy cow. Beyond the Valley of the Dolls is in the Criterion Collection.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's my happening, and it freaks me out. Holy cow.
Huh. I mean, I've never seen it, but, like, from what I've heard, it's not a good movie.
It has, I'm just looking at the listing for Beyond the Valley of the Dolls now. It has a commentary from 2003 featuring screenwriter Roger Ebert.
All right.
Audio commentary from 2006, featuring actors Dolly Reed, Cynthia Myers, Harrison Page, John Lazar, and Erica Gavin. New interview with filmmaker Roger Waters. Well, I mean, I may have to add this to my wish list. I had no idea this was in the Criterion Collection.
It's 50% off, I believe, this week.
My goodness. It may be, yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
I'm actually kind of surprised because, like, yeah, it's a movie you don't hear too many people talk about except for how it's not good.
I know it's a cult movie. I mean, and like, Mike Myers quoted it in Austin Powers, like, this is my happening and it freaks me out. That's from Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Huh. Oh, okay. So, all right. I stand corrected.
It follows three young female rockers going Hollywood in hell-bent 60s style under the spell of a flamboyant producer whose decadent bashes showcase Myers' trademark libidinal exuberance. Transgressive and outrageous, this big studio version of a debaucherous midnight movie is an additionally entertaining romp for one of cinema's great outsider artists. He was king of the nudies, apparently.
King of the
Russ
nudies.
Russ Meyer. Okay. So anyway, so that's Russ Meyer, who's connected to Roger Ebert, who is connected to Vanessa Angel because he perved out on her on an old episode of Siskel and Ebert. That's how we got to that tangent.
Yes. And we're back.
So, and we're back. And we're back.
Yes. So, yes. Yeah, so Stan and Claudia are you know, engaged with Ish and Roy in this bowling game, $1,000 a game. See, dude looks like. Oh, and of course, this is where we see Ish. He needs three strikes to win the whole thing. He gets two strikes.
Yeah.
And that's when Claudia is like, oh, it's hot in here. I need to get something cool from the fridge.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he gets a. You know, opens up the fridge, gets a beer, and of course, the cold from the fridge causes,
a nipular reaction.
There we go. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, got the nips out, and everybody in the room is like, ga ga ga.
Yeah, it's this is like the distraction technique.
Exactly.
That they do to throw off the person's concentration.
Right.
And. Yeah, Roy is like, huh? But Ish is just so oblivious and innocent. He's like, oh, I'll go get a drink. And then he goes, and then, you know, we see the nip thing happen to Randy Quaid.
And everybody's like, ga, ga, ga.
Yeah.
Right. And, but he goes back and he gets the third strike. So Ish wins.
Yay!
And then...
They win money. Yay!
Big money.
And then Claudia makes sort of a smart-ass comment. She's like, oh, wow, the great Stan got beat at his own game. And then Stan's like, hey, can I talk to you privately in the next room? And, yeah, he's doing some bad stuff. He's like hitting her. He's beating her
up. Yeah. I was like, wow, whoa,
Not good. Not good. Not a healthy relationship.
No. I was like, oh, this movie took a turn.
Yeah, yeah.
So then Stan comes out, acts like nothing happened, and he's like, all right, let me give you guys your money. But then he notices that Roy has some fake money in his pocket, because before they came in, Roy had a bunch of Monopoly money in his hand, but he had like some real money wrapped around it, so it makes it look like he has a stack of real money.
So it looks like he had the $1,000 stake, but he didn't have that money. So they're like, oh, you're trying to take me, you didn't even have enough money to play.
Yeah, you son of a bitch.
What the hell, man? So they, and then I think there's like a blackout. They lose power in the room or something.
Yeah, it's a melee. Like Stanley's about to, you know, go off on Roy. He punches him in the face and the lights go off. And then Ish, Roy, and Claudia, they all make a run for it.
Yeah.
Claudia slashes Stan's tires and they all get into Roy's car and drive off.
They escape together. And she's like, yeah, he's... Like, you know, that was my rule. I do not stand for hitting. So he was apparently putting up with a lot of stuff, and this was the straw that broke the camel's back. So she's like, yeah, I'm getting out of here. This is an unhealthy relationship.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to throw in my lot with these two.
Yeah, these two winners.
Scammers. Yeah.
this is my ship has come in.
That's right. So meanwhile, Ish's family sends his brother Thomas after him to go get him and bring him back home.
Yeah, because I guess they feel like, I don't know, they feel like maybe they thought, oh, he's not going to make it out there on his own, this little quest he's doing, so just bring him back.
How will you make it on your own?
Nice. So yes, they send Thomas to go back and get him. We also see that the horse Buttercup is a lot shorter now.
Yes, yes.
Which is a nice little visual gag.
Nice sight gag. So meanwhile, Claudia decides to become business partners with Roy and Ishmael. And she's like, hey, I've got $500 stake money. So we can make this happen.
Yeah, and you guys ain't got no money because I saw you had the fake money. So you kind of need me right now. And they're all doing this while they're eating in a diner. And we see Jonathan Richmond, a musician, playing in the background, who will go on to be in There's Something About Mary.
Yeah, he's sort of almost like the narrator of the Greek chorus of There's Something About Mary.
Yeah, bandolier, something
like that. Yeah, bandolier, that's a good word.
Right?
Yeah.
Love it.
That's a word you don't hear nearly enough of. Bandolier.
I know. I just pulled it out of my ass. I was like, oh, that's a good word.
It's a good word. It's a good word. Strong word.
Thank you.
Manly word.
Thank you.
So meanwhile, there's a woman who asks Ishmael to dance at the bar to this like honky tonk music, and Ishmael's like, oh, so this is rock and roll, and he's very naive and. He's never danced before, and the lady's like, oh, well, I'll teach you. And then her boyfriend comes in.
Her boyfriend, Skidmark, played by baseball pitcher Roger Clemens.
Yeah.
So random.
Random cameo, yep. And he's not pleased to see his woman dancing with another dude.
You trying to pick up my woman?
Yeah. And Roy comes in. You think, oh, he's going to go come to Ish's defense and defuse the situation. No, Roy just like punches out Ish.
You don't mow another man's lawn.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny.
And they're like, well, hey, look, I saved him from a beating from like all those three, four guys. And Claudia's like, you didn't have to have beers with them afterwards. And he's like, well, I couldn't let them know that we knew each other, could I?
Had to sell the story.
Yeah. Roy is just such a scumbag. I love it.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah. So the three of them team up. They decide, and they pull the scams all over the country to get enough money to go to Reno.
Yeah.
A lot of them, of course, involve Claudia dressing up in like, you know, short skirts and jiggling up and down, and all the men going.
She's distracting the other bowlers.
Yeah. Awooga.
Yeah.
Hubba hubba boyo yo.
And we have one gag during this montage where her distraction techniques are not really working with these old farmers. And so Ishmael gets an idea. We see him whisper to Roy, and then they bring in like a sheep.
Yeah.
And the farmers are distracted by the sheep.
Wow. So. Wow.
Bestiality.
They all do it. Hey. Once you go sheep, you that's all you'll want to sleep with. I'll work
well
on
done,
that.
Sir. Well
I'll work. Done. No, that wasn't
no,
good.
Flawless.
No.
Flawless.
No.
No.
That, no. That was my first draft. I'm going back.
No, it's perfect. Perfect nope, as nope. is. Don't edit it in the least.
No, that was a rough was draft. Perfect.
That was great. Great writing. Great delivery. Flawless. 10 out of 10.
Okay. Yeah. So they're running these scams. At one point, they beat an old woman who's like in a jazzy scooter at bowling.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And like, turns out she has no money. So that we see them driving off with her jazzy scooter tied.
Strapped to the car.
God damn.
Yeah. This movie goes hard.
So hard.
And then there's, we see them at the hotel. Like, Roy gets Ishmael up in the middle of the night. And he's like, hey, Ish, we got to go. There's this big, dangerous cloud coming. We got to, no time to talk to Miss Claudia. We got to go. So he's really trying to abandon Claudia and cut her out.
Right.
But they find Claudia's already in the car. So she's on to them.
She's a smart cookie.
Yep, yep. And so Roy and Claudia go off and they fight. They're just like, hey, look, we don't trust each other, but we gotta, we're both trying to exploit Ishmael.
Yeah.
And it turns into an actual fist fight between the two of them.
Yeah, like at one point she kicks him right in the nuts and she's like, oh, you must have wide feet. You got both of them.
Yes. And we see them like hitting each other. He like punches her in the boobs several times.
Yeah, and they kind of jiggle all over the place.
Yeah, he like punches it and it just sort of like shifts to the side. It's very funny because it's so absurd. It's like cartoonish logic.
Yeah, very much so. But yeah, but then after the fight, they see that Isha is already taken off and left a note saying, "Oh, I thought you guys were my friends. Goodbye forever." So it's like, oh, so now they got to go look for Ishmael.
Yeah. So it's just Roy and Claudia left to their own devices. They're driving around. I guess they're still ostensibly on the way to Reno. It's kind of vague. But Roy realizes when they're on the road, he's like close to his boyhood home in Iowa. In what was the name of the town?
Ocelot,
Iowa. Iowa. And he's like, hey, I haven't been here in years. And he takes Claudia over to his boyhood home. We see like the backyard bowling alley, the makeshift bowling alley that his dad made for him.
Yeah, we see the town is kind of on hard times. Everything's kind of run down.
Yeah.
It's not the thriving town it was before.
Right, right. And, Roy pulls out the watch that he got from his dad. He says, I never could get this thing to work. I guess time stopped for me when I left this town.
Oof.
And he mentions that his dad died 10 years ago, and he didn't even have the nerve to come back home for the funeral. Whew. And Claudia develops some sympathy for him. She says, hey, look, why don't we start over? A fresh start, you and me.
Ooh.
And we're going to go find Ishmael. We're going to go find Ish.
Yeah. I mean, this movie with the tone, it kind of shifts kind of wildly because it does wild stuff like shaving off a horse's hooves, but then you get some serious stuff like this where you see Roy as like a real tragic figure.
Yeah, it has some scenes where it does get kind of dramatic, and we're playing things kind of seriously, and because Woody Harrelson actually because he's got dramatic chops, of course, they really play. It works. I mean, it gives the movie a little gravity.
Yeah,
I like it.
Very much so. Very much so. So they're still looking for Ishmael. They find him dancing in a strip club.
Oh yeah.
Just lipstick.
He's shaking it for money.
Yeah.
Just shaking it for dollar bills, y'all.
Mm-hmm. What? Yeah. Just lipstick and bikini top. Just shaking the goods for the men's.
That's right.
Oof.
We're like a year or so after Showgirls, so it's, this is the next best thing.
Yes, he's your private dancer, for money.
That's right.
So then they take him off, they run out of the place. Tells Ishmael that they've made up and they're okay now. They're going to work as a team. No bullshit, no games, no lies, all for one, one for all. Then they go off and they make
it. By the way, for this whole sequence, Randy Quaid is in a two-piece bikini with a tiara.
Yes.
Just put that mental image in there.
If you want to.
I think he has false eyelashes, too.
Yeah, he really went all out for this.
Yeah,
so if you want to picture how that looks,
He prettied himself up, yeah.
Yeah, he's a pretty-looking boy. and they make it to Reno. They they drive past the Jeffersons on Ice,
right?
Which I don't think
that's actually a thing. No.
Okay, I was wondering why they put that in. I thought just like a little quick side joke they put in there. I don't know.
Well, they come back to it later.
That's true. That's true. I guess.
Yeah. So.
So they're like, "Oh, Jefferson on Ice. I love Sherman Helmsley."
Yeah.
They wake up in the hotel room all hungover. Mm-hmm. Ishmael has a tattoo, like a little small green flower on his chest. He kind of freaks out about it.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I've desecrated my body. I can't get into heaven now. And Roy's like, yeah, no, don't worry. That can laser right off. We can get rid of it.
Right.
And Ish goes up to the mirror to look at it. And we see Roy see something, but it isn't until Ish turns around. We see he's got this huge, hideous tattoo on his back of like this woman was like, very droopy breasts.
Yes. It's pretty outrageous.
It's bad in every sense of the word.
Yes.
It's aesthetically bad. It is a bad drawing. It is a bad tattoo work. It's It just, it does not look good.
It's all types of bad. Oops, all bad.
All yes, yes.
Yeah, so then they go to the casino floor, walk mm-hmm. past a craps table where we see a gambler played by, what's this, SNL alum Chris Elliott.
Chris Elliott, yeah, our third SNL alum in the cast. Chris Elliott, who, of course, like, returns later in the next Farrelly Brothers movie, Something About Mary. He's like a millionaire high roller. And he's like, hey, sugar, you know, just, you know, blow on these dice. Give me a little luck. And, you know, he, of course, means Claudia, Vanessa Angel. But Randy Quaid is like, oh, yeah, sure. And so he snatches the dice and throws them. And it actually wins.
Yeah. And then Chris is just like, huh. All yeah. right.
Intriguing.
Okay. Okay.
And then just then, since we're in Reno, we're rearing towards the climax of the movie, who should return in the movie but Ernie McCracken, the great Bill Murray.
What?
Yeah. Ernie McCracken's also in the bowling tournament. One of the reporters is asking him about a pending paternity suit, and Ernie's like, hey, no, there's no truth to that. I pulled out of her really early.
Jesus Christ, Ernie.
So why?
Mother of God.
And we find out that Ernie actually knows Claudia. He has a history with Claudia.
Yeah.
As Ernie says, it's a small world when you've got unbelievable tits.
I think that's beautiful. That's poetry, man.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, baby, can't, you know, let's. Do you think about me? I think about you. Let's make a new start of it. I mean, come yeah. on. Do you remember Chicago? I remember Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Claudia has a thing for bowlers.
Yeah, maybe. I guess it's, yeah. I mean, she seems to have a type.
Yeah. I mean, her ex Stanley and Ernie yeah. and then Roy. Yeah.
That is officially a pattern, my friend.
Yeah. It is a pattern.
She's like a bowling groupie. We never see her bowl herself, do we?
No, we don't. She just kind of jumps around in high heels.
Yeah, she's just sort of the honeypot.
Yeah, very much so. And also, speaking of Ernie, I mean, my God, that comb over. Holy cow.
He has a spectacular comb over. I mean, you thought his 70s fro was something else. The comb over that Bill Murray is sporting at the end of this movie. Oh, my God.
I chihuahua.
It is a thing of beauty. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, it is. I words can't even do it justice. You gotta watch it.
You have to see this movie just for Bill Murray's comb over.
I mean, my God, it is.
What they did with this, I was laughing so hard at the end of this movie for that.
Right. Yeah, it is.
It still makes me smile. But Ernie is being like a major grade A jerk, pisses off everybody so much. Ishmael actually takes a swing at him. He hits the wall and he breaks his hand.
Yeah. So oh, no.
Now he can't bowl in the tournament. What are we going to do?
I don't know, John.
I don't know.
But yeah, then we see Claudia go back to her hotel room. And who happens mm-hmm. to be there? Oh, my God, Stan.
Yeah. Ex-boyfriend Stan. Abusive ex-boyfriend Stan. The guy who looks like the lead singer from what band was it?
Bush.
Bush.
That's right.
Yeah.
Gwen Stefani's ex.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that guy.
Oh, you know he's a jerk.
Yeah. Damn. And, yeah,
who's
so
he's the guy from The Voice that she hooked up with?
Country guy.
Yeah.
I want to say Brett, maybe?
Brett Kavanaugh.
No. Oh, God, no. I hope not.
Okay.
The Voice, Tim McGraw? No.
No. Mixing up all my country singers. Okay, I'm going to look this up.
I'll look. I got it.
Stefani. I think they got married, right?
They did.
Husband.
Ah, oh, fuck.
Gavin. Oh, Blake Shelton.
Blake. I knew it was something.
That's the guy.
It was something folksy sounding.
That's the guy. Yeah. Yeah.
Blake Shelton. Something like that.
Yeah. Unlikely couple, but you know, they seem to be very happy. So
yeah, I mean, I
guess just judging from the promos I've seen from The Voice, I know nothing about them. I've never watched a full episode of The Voice.
Yeah, I mean, it was a cute gimmick in the beginning, but then it kind of ran thin. And yeah, I feel like
their romance, you mean?
I meant the show, but I like that.
Okay.
And like, I don't know, it seems like Gwen has become more and more conservative in her, as she's gotten older from what I've seen, but whatever. The heart wants what it wants.
No, I guess she ain't no Hall of Back Girl after
all. That shit is bananas.
Yeah.
The N-A-N-A-S-C-S-S.
Anyway, so Stan has come after Claudia, and he offers, or she offers to take off with him, and she's like, hey, I've got like 42 grand here in this bag that we've raised, so I can take off with you, and we're just going to go off.
Yeah.
And I'm going to leave these guys in the lurch, as I do, because this is what I do.
This is what I do.
I leave people in the lurch and take off with lots of money.
Right. So then Roy and Ish try to find Claudia. They go to her hotel room. They find out she actually checked out, and she has their bag of money. So now they're like, she betrayed us. So then they go to the bar, drink away their sorrows.
And this scene has one of my favorite gags in the movie. It's just Woody Harrelson just sitting at the bar. And then he just, apropos of nothing, he just randomly turns to the stranger next to him and says, who you calling a psycho? it's so freaking funny.
And the guy's like, I didn't say anything.
Yeah. I'd forgotten that gag, but that made me laugh.
It's so random. It literally comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's so great. Because it's like, who you calling a psycho? And just, yeah. Like, if you tried that in real life, that would weird out anyone you were next to.
It really would. I
kind of want to try it in real life now.
Oh, you'll be sitting alone.
I know, yeah. What else is new?
Wow.
And then Chris Elliott returns. He comes over. He makes a proposition. He's like, hey, I'm going to offer you $1 million to sleep with your friend. So this is kind of playing off like another movie that Woody Harrelson had done not long before, Indecent Proposal.
Yeah, for some reason, I remember when this movie came out, like a lot of people were, it was like in the zeitgeist. A lot of people were making kind of sketches and jokes about it. Like for some reason, this movie really kind of captured the culture at large.
It was Robert Redford was this millionaire or billionaire who comes up to this struggling young couple played by Woody Harrelson and Demi Moore. And he's like, I will give you $1 million if I get to sleep with your wife.
Right.
Like one night with your wife and I give you $1 million. And it's their big dilemma. And there was also that movie Honeymoon in Vegas, which was kind of a but they did it as a comedy. Honeymoon in Vegas, very, very funny movie.
I really dug that movie too, yeah.
If you haven't seen Honeymoon in Vegas, go check it out. It's hilarious.
It's good stuff. You got
Nicolas Cage, Sarah Jessica Parker, James Caan. Actually has an SNL connection.
Ooh, do tell.
Yeah. I was rewatching it a few months ago. You know who has a voiceover part?
Who?
That guy. Who's the announcer of SNL, whose name I'm blanking on. What the hell?
Don Pardo.
Don Pardo.
Wow, John.
Isn't it? Yeah, I know.
Oh boy! Wow, you left me hanging there. I was like, "Who did it?" And he's like, "Oh,
I know." I was trying to buy myself some time. I was like, "The name will come to me." The name didn't come to me, Darren.
Oh boy,
it's bad.
All right, maybe
it's bad.
I'm looking up now. Maybe we'll do Honeymoon in Vegas. I got Pat Morita. I got Peter Boyle in this thing. Tony Shalhoub.
Tony Shalhoub. Yeah.
A young Bruno Mars.
Yes. Interesting. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Maybe. Maybe we'll do this. Hey.
Yeah.
Oh, it's on Tubi. Okay.
Yeah.
I can rock with that.
That might be where I watched it a few months ago.
Okay. I can rock with that.
And that's where I learned the Don Pardo connection. And I was like, I'm going to remember that.
And you did.
I am totally going to remember that man's name.
And not so much.
No, not so much. So anyway, we have Chris Elliott. He comes over and he makes this proposition. And then we have like cut to Roy and he's like swimming in dollar bills. And then it flashes back. And we learn that's just a dream sequence
from
Roy, which was a really weird choice, I think.
Really weird. Because like not only is Roy playing with a ton of money, but we see Ish crying in bed in his underwear.
Right, and he's like icing his crotch.
Yeah.
He's got like a pillow under his crotch, so he's something heinous has gone on there.
Oh, dear.
And it's, I think it's one of the only times this movie just kind of backs away from a joke it made. It's
yeah.
kind of odd.
Yeah, like, I feel like if you're going to make that joke, make the joke. Go all in. Don't be
yeah.
like,
yeah.
oh, it's just a dream. Oh, psych. Mm-hmm. Like, no. If you're going to have a joke where Ishmael gets, you know, a proposition by a rich man and, you know, taking advantage right. of, do it. Have him.
And look, we you know, it's not like we haven't had other outrageous jokes in the movie. We've had Roy sleeping with his landlady. We've had Ishmael becoming a stripper. We had a scene where like Ishmael's like smoking out of this gigantic bong. I mean, we've already done all this other outrageous stuff. Why are we backing away?
Yeah.
From the forced prostitution now.
Yeah. Oh, suddenly, oh, Ishmael getting violated. That's too far.
Yeah. It's just weird. I just don't quite get with it. It's not funnier that it's a dream sequence.
Not really.
Yeah. You just see that and you're just like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's weird. All right.
Okay. But, yeah, so it was just a dream. The two of them still got no money. And that's mm-hmm. where Ishmael says, well, Mr. Munson, you should do it. You should bowl in the tournament. You still have right. it. You can still do this. And, you know, Roy's like, no, wait, I got no hand. What are you talking about? Yeah. And then that's when they cut to a commercial they see on the TV playing at the bar for the Unified Fund, where Ernie McCracken acts as a father to fatherless children. And right. it's like him standing next to these, you know, fatherless children. And, of course, the mom of all these fatherless children are all
super hot
supermodels. Yes.
Yeah. He's sponsoring a different fatherless family in every city of the tournament. And like the kids in the commercial are like, sometimes I wake up in the morning and Mr. McCracken's already there with my mom.
Yeah. So he's just plowing throughout these yeah. United States.
And the last shot of the ad is just Bill Murray standing with like these four super hot, statuesque, voluptuous women, and the kids are just like sort of barely in frame at the bottom.
Yeah.
And he's like, these kids, they almost got Munsoned, but now that's not going to happen.
Wow.
It's so funny. It's so over the top.
Wow.
Yeah. And Bill Murray's just so freaking funny.
He really is. It's, but then, of course, that's when Roy sees this and it just makes him so angry. He's like, all right, I'll do it. I'll bowl.
Yeah.
So he agrees to bowl. So he goes back into his, this is him returning to his the love of his life that he hadn't right. done in forever. You know, he has to go register. He hasn't paid due since 1979. So he owes yeah. a whopping total of
$38. $38. And he doesn't even have that. He pawns his championship ring. He's like, hey, could I, you know, give this as collateral? And yeah, they let him do that. I love that. Yeah, his dues are in arrears for, you know, what is it? It's like 27 years.
Yeah.
Like, or 17 years, excuse me. And they're like, yeah, that's
$38. It's like 38. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Damn it.
And so he's in the tournament. Ernie's in the tournament. It's and the first ball that we see Roy bowl, his hand comes off in the ball.
Yeah. And
so it's just like rolling down the lane with
a yeah, lot of fake hand jokes in this movie
and
hook true. Jokes. And we also get a cameo as the announcer of this tournament, the lead singer of Blues Traveler, John Popper.
John Popper, yes.
All the 90s musicians are in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. This was like Blues Traveler's heyday, and they pop up at the end of the movie as well.
They do. They do.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's kind of fun.
But yeah, we see Roy, of course, he's freezing up. He's, you know, totally scared at first. But as he does it, he gets better, you know, slowly but surely.
It's his mojo back, baby.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he does slowly get better. And he slowly starts to remember, you know, the man he used to be, and he starts climbing up the ranks, and he's
yeah.
you know, closing in on McCracken.
Yeah.
And up to the point where it's down to just Munson and McCracken.
Yeah. And there's a great joke at this point where Roy looks up on the electronic scoreboard and he sees a note on there. It just says, "Roy, I made a mistake. Please forgive me. Let's get married. Claudia." And Roy thinks like, "Oh my God, Claudia's come back to me. We're going to have a big romantic reunion." And then he looks over and then it's like Ernie McCracken. And he's just like laughing by the scoreboard. He programmed it in and then it shifts to a new message. It's like, "In your dreams, Munson." Oh, it's so funny. It's so cruel. And it's so funny. And it comes at just the right point in the movie too, because it's the point in where a lot of movies, you would have that romantic reunion right before the big climactic match. But no, that doesn't happen. It's just Bill Murray being a dick.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising. This movie really kind of subverted my expectations, especially this final scene. We'll get into it, mm-hmm. but there are a lot of moments in this final scene where I thought one thing would happen and then the total opposite happened.
Zigs where you thought it was going to zag.
Very much so. We'll get there. So it's down to Roy and Ernie. We got Urge.
Finals.
And then finally, we got Urge Overkill singing the national anthem.
That's right. Girl, you'll be a woman soon.
Yeah. God, that song is such a banger.
You'll be a woman soon. It's a Neil Diamond song, isn't it?
It is.
Nice.
It is. The Diamond Man.
That guy wrote so many freaking bangers, man.
I'm a believer. Come on.
I'm a believer. Cherry Cherry.
Cherry Cherry is so underrated. Oh, my God. That song goes so hard.
I listen to that song like once every couple months because it just pumps you up, man.
It's a good song.
You want to feel good. Just go listen to Cherry Cherry, man.
I know everybody loves Sweet Caroline. I think Cracklin' Rosie might be better. Cracklin' Rosie. Okay. I celebrate all of Neil Diamond's. There were a couple years there in college where I was really into Neil Diamond. I don't know why.
Right.
But like
did you have like the haircut and the sparkly shirt and all that?
No.
You were like the guys in Saving Silverman, right?
Now who's got money for that? Come on.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you dream it, you can be it.
Yeah. Someday, John.
I'm just saying, I think you could pull that look off, my friend.
Well, thank you. Okay. Well, hey,
maybe something for the album recording.
Yeah, maybe.
Just throwing it out there.
Album recording October 8th, Newark Culture Club. Who knows? You might see me dressed up as Neil Diamond for it.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
You heard it here first. Yes. If you can bedazzle me like a light blue jumpsuit with, you know, encrusted with rhinestones, with my name spelled on the back and an eagle, reach out to me. Let me know.
And I'm just going to throw this out there. If you can get that outfit for Darren will perform a touching rendition of "Turn on Your Heart Light."
Oh, don't think I won't. Don't you think I won't? So yes, jumpsuit fringe would be preferred.
Need the wig.
You know, and something that's festooned with rhinestones.
At one point, ages ago, I worked at Barnes & Noble, and I worked in the music and DVD department. And there was, at one point, there was a Neil Diamond Greatest Hits album that had come out or something.
Yeah.
And one day, my coworker, Vicky and I, we were breaking down the display that we had and had like a life-size thing of Neil Diamond. And we cut out the headpiece. And we made it into a mask because it was like the perfect, it was life size. And so we had a fun shift once just like running around with Neil Diamond masks. Actually, it was just like one Neil Diamond mask. We traded off on it.
You guys know how to party.
Yeah. Yeah.
So good.
We had fun. We sang Sweet Caroline. Yes.
Nice. It's a good one. Where the hell were we? How the hell did we get here?
We are at the finals. Roy versus Ernie McCracken. Battle of the Comb-Overs. The Comb-Overs are so outrageous.
Oh, my just God.
The finale of this movie, the Comb-Overs, when they go askew, it is chef's kiss.
Right. And also you have McCracken. Like, he's wearing these, like, cowboy shirts with, like, flames on them and, like, a little scarf around his neck and his bowling ball.
Yeah,
it's like this clear bowling ball with a rose in it. I mean,
a rose embedded inside of it. It's like a
wow.
And I love that the, you know, as we get deeper and deeper into it, the Comb-Overs Askew, never commented on by anybody. It's just they are out there, and it is going like a foot past their head.
It really is. Like at one point, is like his hair, it's like sticking straight up almost.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, so we see, we cut to Stan and Claudia at the bar. Stan has to make a call. Claudia asks the bartender to put on ESPN. He watches Roy bowl. And yeah, the two of them are going back and forth, back and forth. You know, Roy's keeping up. And now we're at the 10th frame where he bowls Roy, and then he gets the dreaded 7-10 split. One of the most
toughest shot in bowling. Yeah. Because you got a pin on one end, you got a pin on the other. You got to knock them both over. How are you going to knock them both over?
It can't be done.
Knock one over and have it go over to the other side and knock over the other pin. It can't be done, Darren.
Can't be done. Can't be done. Men have died trying.
That's true. That's true. I'm sure there's documentation on that.
Yeah, I think that's a fact. I said it into a microphone.
And then just then, Brother Thomas comes to get Ishmael and take him home. And, I mean, so even Ish isn't there anymore. Claudia's gone. Ish is gone. What the hell?
Yeah, that's one of the points where I thought, because when Thomas goes to get Ishmael, I thought Ishmael would, like, maybe put up a fight more, or, like, maybe he would have learned to, you know, be more assertive spending time with Roy. But no, he just, like, agrees to go with Thomas, and then they both take off.
Yeah.
Which that does, that's surprising.
Huh. Yeah.
All right. But
movie's zigging, you're zagging, my friend.
But yeah, against all odds, Roy makes the 7-10 split.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it. And you can see McCracken start to McCrack a little bit. He's unraveled.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Wordplay.
Yeah. And Roy hits two strikes. So now Big Earn McCracken has to hit three consecutive strikes to win the tournament.
Right.
Wow. I mean, pressure's on.
Pressure is on. So Roy sees Ish's left. He's wondering where everybody went. And so then Earn has to get up to bowl. He gets one strike. He gets two strikes.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah.
And he can see he looks like a man. When he goes up to the third strike, Bill Murray, he looks like a man possessed. Like he is not there.
He is hoisting that ball in the air. His eyes are just bulging out of his skull. He has this deranged look on his face. Again, so funny. So it's yeah. And then he hits the third strike. And amazingly enough, this is a thing that Bill Murray did in real life. He bowled three consecutive strikes.
Wild. In
front of all this crowd of extras that apparently the Farrelly brothers were like, hey, look, you got to be really enthusiastic. You got to go nuts when he bowls three strikes. It's probably going to take him a while to do this because, you know, not a professional bowler. He's an actor. Then Bill Murray gets up there, bowls three strikes. So everybody is going apeshit for real.
It is genuine pandemonium.
Yeah. Dogs and cats living together.
Living together. Mass hysteria.
And he hits the third strike. He wins by one pin. So he wins the tournament 226 to 225.
And Ernie wins. Roy loses.
The bad guy wins.
What the? It's Chinatown.
Yeah.
What the fuck? This is, like, I mean, I was like, wait, Roy came all this way and he blew it?
Yeah.
I was like.
And then to just twist the knife, they're shaking hands after the tournament. Roy's rubber hand comes off in Ernie's hand and Ernie just throws the rubber hand into the crowd.
And the announcer's like, oh, some lucky fan has the souvenir now.
Yeah. And they're saying, like, Ernie, you know, you won the tournament. What does this mean for you? And he's like, finally, Big Earn is above the law.
I finally have enough money to do whatever I want.
Yeah. It's so great.
Jeez.
He plays such a great jerk. It's one of the all-time best Bill Murray performances.
It's pretty wild. And Yeah, and then, but it's Roy's just sitting there stunned all alone, and he's there all day, like even after the game is over and everybody's left, and it's just him and the custodians sweeping up. And one of the custodians finds his hand. It's like, oh, here, sorry, man, here you go.
Yeah, he like just gives it back to him. So he at least gets his hand back, so that's something, right?
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, like that really surprised me, like,
yeah,
that the bad guy won in this. Okay.
And kind of wallowing in it. Yeah. And then Roy's getting ready to leave Reno. He's getting up in his car. And then Stan comes back. He comes to beat up Roy. Because apparently Claudia ran off with him. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Who could have seen that coming?
Claudia leaving the guy she was with and stealing a bunch of money? I mean, that's never that's only happened like 2-3 times in this movie. Yeah.
The things that are happening, no one could have seen coming.
And, yeah, and then Stan says that Claudia called Ernie McCracken 14 times in the last few days. So apparently she was in cahoots with Ernie. Yeah. And again, another really nice scene from Woody Harrelson where he's like, oh, no, I hate Ernie McCracken. He gave me this. And he holds up his rubber hand. And every time he does that in the movie where he's like trying to indicate his ring, his championship ring, everybody comments on the hand instead. Right. And this is the one time he's like commenting on the actual hand and they start reacting to the ring, which is a nice callback. But like they're like, oh, Ernie did that to you? And he's like, well, yes. Well, no, I used to think that, but maybe it was my fault. You know, he's like kind of owning up to his own mistakes for the first time. And again, Harrelson like gives it a little gravity, man. You feel for Roy.
Yeah. Like, I think this is a scene that, cause like I said earlier, I was kind of shocked. I was like, oh, he didn't win. What the fuck was this all about? But I think this scene makes it like kind of say what it's all about, like about him sort of owning his role into what happened to his life. Because it is true. He didn't, like, back in the then, he didn't feel good about going into that bowling alley, but he still went.
Yeah.
So it's like it.
And he's finally taken responsibility for it.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I was naive, but something in me was telling me not to go, but I still went. So it's like, was it all Ernie's fault? Not really. Like, maybe I need to.
He's like, so, I don't know. You know, he's like, he's questioning himself for the first time in like 2 decades. So.
Yeah. So it's like, I was like, oh, okay. So it's not about whether he won the game. It's about this moment.
About how you play the game.
Dude. Yeah. Oh, there it is. Yeah. Life lessons.
Yeah.
So we cut back to 1 week later. Roy is back in his crappy apartment. He's pouring out all his alcohol, quitting drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Claudia shows up to the apartment and she has the money. They were actually able to double it because Stan bet against him.
Yeah.
So they actually have more money. They have 84.
And she confesses that she made all those calls to Ernie just to throw Stan off the scent. So that Stan thought that she was in league with Ernie, but she was really planning to come back to Roy the whole time.
Right. Exactly.
So
Claudia kind of lays it all out on the line saying, yeah.
Because look, the alcoholic guy with the rubber hand lost the bowling tournament in Reno. You got to lock that shit down.
Yeah. Oh, all the ladies are going to want him.
That's right. Ladies love cool Roy Munson.
But Roy's still upset that she bailed on him, and he basically says, yeah, I kind of don't really need that money anymore, and showed them a check for like $500,000. That he got because he's now sponsored by Trojan Condoms. Because when he was bowling, they called him the Rubber Man because of his hand.
That's right. Yeah.
So now he has like commercial. He does commercials and he's a spokesman and he does endorsement deals for Trojan Condoms. So
he has to give a talk to a school.
Yes, Vassar. I think he said.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like Vassar. You going to Vassar?
those kids are filthy. Just you know.
They're
not using any protection at all. They really need that lecture.
Vassar, they take it up the ass, sir. Okay.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
We apologize to all our listeners from Vassar.
I'm trying to make up for that sheep line. I thought this was better.
I mean, cleverly done.
Thank you. See, that's better. All right.
Vassar, they take it up the asser.
That's sir.
Okay.
It's more of more fish. Yeah, no. So right. So Ishmael goes back home.
Yes.
And Ishmael goes.
Ishmael back. Returns, and it's taken him a long time to get back home because they're going back on horse ride.
Yes,
horse-drawn carriage.
Yes.
So
they get back home, and in his house with his parents, he sees Roy and Claudia waiting for him.
That's right. They beat him there because they drive.
Yes.
So.
They used that.
They used, in your face, Amish people.
Yeah, they used the devil's chariot.
Yeah.
And Ishmael's dad tells Ishmael, yeah, they told us everything. They told us about the booze and the lusting and the gambling and how you, son, got Roy Munson to quit all of that. And
yeah,
how you got Claudia to stop being such a whore.
Yeah, you straightened them out. You quoted the scriptures to give them strength. And yeah, and he's like, our family's proud of you, son.
Aww.
And they put $500,000 in the bank. They've saved the farm from foreclosure. It's all good. They're all hunky dory. Ishmael's accepted back into the community. He's got a cute lady who seems to be into him.
Rebecca.
Rebecca.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how what he's going to do about those tattoos, though. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, I guess.
I don't know.
Yeah. And then, Claudia and Roy.
They got another $500,000. They can probably pay for some laser.
Yeah. But they can't use lasers. That's the devil's plaything, is it? It's all it all belongs to the devil.
Yeah, it's all the devil stuff. Yeah.
It's the devil's sunshine lasers are.
So we got a joyful reunion at the Amish community. Roy and Claudia are driving off. And Claudia gives Roy his dad's watch, and he's like, hey, you finally got it working again. She goes, yeah, I wound it.
It's like, oh, it's got a winder?
Yeah. I love that he was just so stupid he didn't realize he had to wind the watch for 17 years.
That was pretty funny, yeah.
Yeah.
And, then the two of them kiss, and they drive off with the Amish people saying, oh, bye, Brother Munson. Bye, whore.
Bye, whore.
Bye, whore.
And then we have, for no reason whatsoever, we have Blues Trapper as Amish guys. They're playing their song, But Anyway. Yeah. Catchy little song. Yeah.
Catchy little number.
Yeah. And it's from their first album.
Yeah. And and then that's the movie, Kingpin. Yeah, a lot of ups and downs. The tone kind of changes all over the place, but it's still got a lot of solid jokes in here. It
holds up pretty well.
Yeah.
It was longer than I remembered. It's like nearly 2 hours. It's like an hour 53.
I was surprised how long it was, too. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, like usually a movie like this, you're expecting like an hour and a half, but yeah, it works.
I think it meanders
a little bit maybe, but yeah, still good. Still very funny.
Still good. And I would agree with you. One of Bill Murray's best performances. I mean,
yeah.
Like he, again, like he's not in the entire film, but when he's in it, you remember.
What is there is choice. It's primo Bill Murray. It's like A++, double plus good.
Yeah. Exactly. It's almost like how, John Turturro isn't in The Big Lebowski that much at all, but when he's on there, he makes a meal out of the time he's in there.
Another bowling movie. Is there something about bowling movies that brings out great performances from character actors, you think?
I don't know. I don't know, John, but I didn't watch my friends die face down in the muck, so I just fucking strumped it. Just waltz around.
I gotta rewatch The Big Lebowski. It's been ages since I watched that one.
That's right. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
God, I used to be able to quote it all the time. I gotta watch it again just so I can keep up on it.
Yeah, you really do. You can't let those Big Lebowski skills atrophy, man.
I know, right?
Yeah.
What will my friends think? What would they say?
Those Big Lebowski quotes, they really pull the room together.
Yeah, so. I can't let down the Little Lebowskis.
Anyway, that's Kingpin. Yeah, that's fun. Check it out.
Yeah.
Can't believe it's 30 years old, but...
Yeah. Check it out, folks. And that's our episode, guys. Thanks again for listening to the podcast. As always, you could follow us on the Blue Skies at SNL Nerds. You can donate to our Patreon, non-productive.com.
That is also true.
And check us out on our YouTube page at non-productive.com. Mm-hmm. And as always, you can follow me, myself, and I on all the socials at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N, Credible.
Yes, and you can follow me on all the socials at Trumbull Comic. TRUMBULL on the word comic. And yeah, check us out on YouTube. You can find the entire archive of the podcast there. And you can hear us talking about all sorts of other old movies with SNL cast members. You, like like, check out the episode on Spies Like Us. That's a fun movie, and you get to hear the clip of Roger Ebert perving out on Vanessa Angel.
Yeah, so if that's your kink, go for it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's got to be somebody's kink, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like ASMR Roger Ebert talking about.
Sure, yeah. Hey, we don't judge. We don't kink shame here. We don't believe that.
You do, man.
Whatever floats your boat.
Whatever gets the flag up the flagpole.
That's right.
Whatever raises the mizzen mast.
That's right. We salute it.
Yes, exactly. Flagpole sitter.
Been around the world and found that only stupid people are breeding. Things cloning and feeding, and I don't even know what TV.
Nice. But I'm not well.
Army Danger, underrated band. They deserved a better go of it.
Yeah, I think we talked about them on another episode when we talked about, 100 Cigarettes?
That sounds right, yeah, because they did a cover of Save It For Later in the movie 200 Cigarettes, when actually you hear the original version of Save It For Later during the burn reason sequence in this movie. So it all ties together. It's all a rich tapestry.
Right. Yeah, it really ties the room together.
I'm intertwining my fingers right now.
I see it.
Symbolize the rich tapestry of this movie and our podcast in general, the SNL Nerds.
It all comes together.
It's all about that.
Yeah. So, but John, what are we going to do for the next episode? Because, like, the next episode, I believe that's your birthday episode, good sir.
What are we going to do? Fuck if I know.
What? But.
No, I think we're gonna have some fun. I think we're gonna watch an old favorite of mine. Is it one you've seen before? I can't remember if you've watched it before. We're gonna watch the movie Zero Effect, people.
Yeah, Bill Pullman, our SNL connection, Mr. Ben Stiller.
Yes,
we got, I know him. Got Ryan O'Neal up in this motherfucker. Mm-hmm. Angela Featherstone, Kim Dickens.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is a movie I believe I saw maybe once or twice years ago, but I don't remember much of it at all. So this will be new to me, I guess.
It is a fun movie. It has only grown on me over the years as I've seen it. It is one that I own.
Oh.
And it actually, surprisingly enough, has a Sherlock Holmes connection.
What?
So we'll get into that next week. I'll tell you all about it, my friend.
Ooh, la-dee-duh.
All about it. Yeah. So, Zero Effect, Bill Pullman, Ben Stiller. Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah.
All right. Looking forward to it.
So that'll be it next week. You have your homework assignment, people. Go watch Zero Effect in good health.
Mm-hmm.
And then join us next week for the discussion of Zero Effect. But until then...
Knock out!
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.